I just want to touch on this book of Leviticus, the way of drawing near unto God, viewed as dwelling in the sanctuary. This is slightly different then as we viewed him in Exodus, as being on the mountaintop and to be declaring his law unto the people. The difference being that God speaks out of the tabernacle of the congregation. Chapter 1 and verse 1, he says, "And the Lord called unto Moses and spake unto him out of the tabernacle of the congregation." God is at the center in the dwelling place of his people. He is dwelling in the same way that they are dwelling, in tents. And while Exodus was constituting the state of the nation, and God says, "I will take to you me for a people, and I will be to you a God." Now, in Leviticus, God is declaring the conditions necessary for relationship. And he says in chapter 20 and verse 26, "Ye shall be holy unto me." And for us as believers, there is still that necessity for us to maintain conditions of relationship which are befitting the God who has called us out of the world. And he still cries unto us, as is found in Peter, "Be ye holy, for I am holy." But Leviticus is no longer concerned with the lawgiver giving regulations from above to constitute the state of the nation, but is concerned of one being in the midst of his people, prescribing the conditions of their relationship with him. And the wonderful thing about Leviticus is this, and the types and shadows that are brought before us in the book, is that they present holy things which are far beyond our comprehension, which, if given to us in their fullness and all at once, would not be able to be understood by our capacity. God uses objects. He uses sacrifice as the picture to help us in our capacity to understand who he is and what his son is like, and how we have relationship with him. Because without these object lessons, I would submit to you that these things would be far too great for us to comprehend. And it is the purpose of these object lessons in the sacrifices to elevate our thoughts to be occupied with the similar characteristics which befit Christ, to draw out similar or similarities from the offerings and Christ. And so, as we come to the book of Leviticus, not only are we concerned with the way that the Levites will deal in that priestly manner for the people, but we're reminded of the high cost of sacrifice and the high cost of sin, for sin is the most expensive thing in the world, whether pardoned or unforgiven. Pardoned, its cost falls upon the atoning sacrifice. You can think of Christ at this point. And the cost was mighty as God delivered up his son into the hands of sinful mankind to be taken to the cross of Calvary. And the cost and its magnitude was beyond our comprehension. The cost of sin for the Lord. And yet, unforgiven, it remains the most expensive thing, because unforgiven, the cost must remain on the impenitent soul. Just because it goes unforgiven does not mean it doesn't have an associated cost to it. And as you go through the book of Leviticus, we'll see that the subject of sin is dealt with in all its character, in all its different forms, in its ignorance and in its known quantity, it is dealt with by sacrifice. And how costly to the children of Israel, after animal, and after blood is sprinkled so often to provide atonement, a covering for their sin. Now that is where these offerings and these sacrifices will fall a little short. For in the Old Testament, we're dealing with atonement. We're dealing with a covering for sin. And yet when we come to the New Testament and the sacrifice which Christ made and the magnitude of it, we're dealing with the propitiation, the full payment for sin. A full discharge, not just a covering, but full atonement, full payment being made. That sin in its entirety, both at the root and the fruit, could be dealt with. Now let's just say something about the order of these sacrifices and where the trespass offering sits in that order. Because there is two ways in which we can look at the sacrifices as drawn out here. And very helpfully, a rough outline for us is that there is a offering type per chapter. And for myself, I find it very helpful when the chapter breaks also are the subject breaks. And so in chapter 1, we have the burnt offering. And I mentioned there's two ways to look at the scriptures, two ways to interpret them, if you like. One is to look at it through our own lens. What can I get out of the passage? What can I get from the Word of God today? What practical lesson can I draw? And meanwhile, there's a huge amount of value with drawing practical lessons for ourselves. It is not the only way in which we can come and view the scriptures. The second way would be to think about how does God see this word? What does it tell me about God? What is God's perspective on these things? And to try and shift our view and to understand deeper the heart of God as displayed in these things. And as he is talking, God is talking from out of the tabernacle. I'd submit to you that he starts with things which are dearest to his heart. Starting with the burnt offering. A whole being, fully and self-surrendered unto the Lord, unto death. The burnt offering of the herd, of the flock, and of the fowls, the summation of a whole life given to God. And you could write over the burnt offering, honour brought to God. And a whole life is surrendered. And we're thinking of Christ in his death, the full honour being brought to God. Not ever wanting to glory for himself, but all glory for the Father. And then we come to the meal offering, secondly then. As we move out, if you like, and if the burnt offering is closest to the heart of God, we're moving out manward. We're going out towards man. And the meal offering is not now necessarily about whole life being given on the altar, but a whole life of sanctification, a whole life of fruitfulness for God. Because there's no mention of sacrifice or of blood or of flesh or of fat. And sometimes in these offerings, it's as important to understand what is left out as what is kept in. You say, but Cain offered a bloodless sacrifice, yet it was unaccepted. And it was because it came from a sinful nature and an impure heart. And yet Christ both had a sinless nature and a pure motive of heart. And if you like, often it has been drawn the correlation between the meal offering and the meat offering. and the life of Christ. And it's that which the priest could enjoy. The priest could take his part of the altar. Verse 10, and that which is left of the meat offering shall be Aaron's and his sons. You see, there's something in the life of Christ which we can enjoy. Now, not to take too much away from other teachers as they come to speak to you, but then quickly moving on to the peace offering, we're moving out and out towards man, and peace offering is want to be given. And the peace offering speaks of a soul at rest, having sins forgiven and peace with God, like in Romans in chapter 5 and verse 1. Just that reconciliation of being drawn back in relationship with God. And then we move out. That peace offering is the first place in which we're brought in. And it is the final of those sweet savour offerings unto God. And yet, now we enter into chapter 4. And sin is in view. And these are now not a sweet smelling savour unto God. The sin offering, for which was done outside the camp, making amends for sin as the root, if you like. And these two non-sweet savour offerings, the sin offering in chapter 4, and through to chapter 6 we have the trespass offering. Chapter 5 and chapter 6 we have the trespass offering. And if the sin offering deals with the root, well, the trespass offering deals with the fruit of sin. Some of those actions more generically taken, although hard to uncouple the sin offering and the trespass offering, we'll try and deal with some of the detail of the trespass offering today. But you can see in the order, as you're moving further away from, if you like, from that Holy of Holies, of a life fully given over to God in honour, moved all the way out to dealing with men in their trespasses. And that is just the entirety of the sacrifice of the Lord Jesus Christ. And the scale of it is immense, because not only does it deal with the sins of men and their trespasses, as they have trespassed against God, towards one another, in the holy things of God, what they say and what they touch and how they talk, all the way through to how Christ has honoured God in that full sacrifice at the cross of Calvary. And so the spectrum is broad. We're dealing with almost a more manward aspect of these sacrifices, the trespass offering for sin committed unintentionally and intentionally. Now let's just touch into some of the details of this sacrifice together. Let's read together chapter 5 and verse 1. And we'll just take out a few verses as we go through. And if a soul sin and hear the voice of swearing, and is a witness, whether he hath seen or known of it, if he do not utter it, then he shall bear his iniquity. Or if a soul touch anything, if a soul touch any unclean thing, whether it be a carcass of an unclean beast, or a carcass of unclean cattle, or a carcass of unclean creeping things, and if it be hidden from him, he shall also be unclean and guilty. Verse 4, or if a soul swear, and pronouncing with his lips to do evil or to do good, whatsoever it be that a man shall pronounce with an oath, and it be hid from him, when he knoweth of it, he shall be guilty in one of these. And so we have there, if it be hidden from him, if it be hid from him, if it be done in ignorance, well, the outcome is really the same in verse 5, and it shall be, when he shall be guilty in one of these things, that he shall confess he hath sinned in that thing. Now here is the details of the offering itself. Verse 6, and he shall bring his trespass offering unto the Lord for his sin which he hath sinned. A female from the flock, a lamb or a kid of the goats for a sin offering, and the priest shall make an atonement for him concerning his sin. And if he be not able to bring a lamb, then he shall bring for his trespass which he hath committed two turtle doves or two young pigeons unto the Lord, one for a sin offering and the other for a burnt offering. And he shall bring them unto the priest, who shall offer that which is for the sin offering first, and wring off his head from his neck, and shall not divide it asunder. And he shall sprinkle of the blood of the sin offering upon the side of the altar, and the rest of the blood shall be wrung out at the bottom of the altar. It is a sin offering. And he shall offer the second for a burnt offering, according to the manner. And the priest shall make an atonement for him, for his sin, which he hath sinned, and it shall be forgiven him. But if he be not able to bring two turtle doves or two young pigeons, then he that sinned shall bring for his offering the tenth part of an ephah of fine flour for a sin offering. He shall put no oil upon it, neither shall he put any frankincense thereon, for it is a sin offering. And then drop down to verse 14. And the Lord spake unto Moses, saying, if a soul commit a trespass and sin through ignorance in the holy things of the Lord, then he shall bring for his trespass unto the Lord a ram without blemish, out of the flocks, with thy estimation, by shekels of silver, after the shekel of the sanctuary for a trespass offering. And he shall make amends for the harm that he hath done in the holy thing, and shall add the fifth part thereto. Verse 17, and if a soul sin and commit any of these things which are forbidden to be done by the commandments of the Lord, though he wist it not, yet is he guilty and shall bear his iniquity, and shall bring a ram without blemish out of the flock with thy estimation for a trespass offering unto the priest, and the priest shall make an atonement for him concerning his ignorance, wherein he erred and wist it not, and it shall be forgiven him. It is a trespass offering. He hath certainly trespassed against the Lord. And we move into chapter 6 then, of trespasses done wittingly against a neighbour, and the restoration and the sacrifice which is needed. Now, one of the main things which characterise the trespass offering is the idea of needing to make recompense and needing to make restitution for the sin which has been committed. You will understand that sin, not only is it against God, just like Joseph said when in Potiphar's house, how can I sin against God and do this great wickedness against God? But it robs not only from God, but from people too. We understand that through these chapters that not only is the sin committed against others, and the sin can be committed against the sanctuary, but the sin is ultimately committed against God, and there's restitution and there's recompense which is want to be made for the sin which is committed. And we'll see that throughout the trespass offering. But one thing which is similar between the sin offering and the trespass offering is that these things can be done completely out of ignorance. Or there can be an attitude of doubt when it comes to sin. And the first thing I really want to make mention of as you read through these chapters, in chapters 5 and 6, is this. If it be hidden from him. If it be hid from him, and then down, though he sinned through ignorance, though he wist it not, ignorance wherein he erred and wist it not, and he knew these things not. And the idea is that these sins can be committed out of a heart which is just generally opposed to God. The idea is that we as humans, we as mankind, and as the fallen race of Adam, ultimately seek self, the promotion of self. We seek our own will ever since Adam fell, and we seek our own will and not the will of God. It means that we are bound to do things unto our fellow man and unto God, which trespass his law and go against the things which he has made very clear we ought not to. And so when we come to the trespass offering, the conscience conveys guilt. That's one of the things which is made clear in verse 5 of chapter 5. And it shall be when he shall be guilty in one of these things, that he shall confess that he hath sinned in that thing. When he shall be guilty. Well, how would he know that he was guilty? It might be very dubious about the oath that he had given. It may well have been that someone else may have drawn to his attention that his oath was not maintained. It may have been drawn to his attention that he had touched, or she had touched, an unclean thing. Now, some of these things could have been done completely in ignorance. And yet, over the course of time, the scriptures make the point that the conscience is that tool which is necessary to convey guilt. And it is in the same vein that you and I understand our guilt. It is through the conscience of our hearts. And it indicates to us that sin is an inherent general truth to us as individuals, as in the fallen race of Adam. Now, the first things that he deals with in the trespass offering is regarding touching and talking. Verses 1 is about the voice of swearing and is a witness, and how that he ought to bear the iniquity if he has heard it and doesn't say anything. Verse 2 about touching an unclean beast or of the cattle or of a carcass. And I would just point out in application that the conduct of a believer and the conduct of one seeking to dwell with God, the things we say and the things we do, the way we talk and the things we touch ought to remain sanctified in our lives. The things our hands do, the things our mouth says, ought to be sanctified unto God. For here it is clearly seen that they hold a price, and the sin of touching the wrong thing and the sin of saying the wrong thing, or even saying the right thing but not following through. And it needs to be dealt with. For atonement for sin to be made and restoration of the fellowship with God. And stressed for us is about specifically making restitution in cases where repair needs to be made for the harm caused. And it involves a sense of guilt that requires compensation, especially when an offence has been committed against God's property or against another person. And so the character of these sins which are committed, they would cover a broad range, from that which is spoken to that which is touched. But we see that regardless of whether it is that which is spoken or that which is touched, the conscience is essential to convey guilt, and confession is essential before sacrifice takes place. Verse 5, he shall confess that he hath sinned in that thing. Now, just to make mention of talking, it may well be that you would say something and you would promise to do good and yet you would do evil. You would promise to do not do evil, and yet you might follow through and do that. That's the kind of oath which has been spoken of here. It's drawn out when we come to the New Testament too, about the sons and the parables, about the one who says he will go and he doesn't go, and the judgment which falls upon him from the words of the Lord himself. And so what we do and what we promise is important to note. But then we come on to the sacrifice. Verse 6, all the way through and down to verse 13. Now you'll notice that when we come to the trespass offering, there is a scale. There is a scale. If you were to go back to the burnt offering, there is also a scale. Then it would be of the herd in the burnt offering, then of the flock, and then of the fowls. And there should be nothing which would hinder a man to bring honour to God, no matter the scale. A lot of the times in Christendom, it might be said that you can come as you are. Now, you can come as you are, but you can't do what you want. And so, brought out for us here is the fact that, yes, you may not be able to offer to the same extent. Come as you are, as God has provided for you in your life. But you can't do what you want. You can't bring it in any way that you would want to. There is a scale of sacrifice which is to be followed very explicitly. From verse 6, I guess through to verse 7, you have the scale of the lamb. And the lamb is to be given in accordance with the sin offering. The same type, the same way that our sin offering would have been given. Because sin needs to be cleansed for. That is the first thing that needs to be done. And you see that then when you come to the turtle doves. If a man could not offer, if he didn't have the wealth, he wouldn't be precluded from dealing with his sin. If a man or woman couldn't do the same and offer in the same large way that someone else could, they wouldn't be precluded or held back from offering for their sin, because they could bring two turtle doves. One for a sin offering and the other for a burnt offering. Now again, notice what comes first. It is the sin offering. Sin first needs to be dealt with and cleansing for that sin before honour could ever be brought to God. We mentioned that the burnt offering is about honour being brought to God, and it tells us of the severity of sin. And sin must first be dealt with before we can ever bring honour to God. And that goes for your life and for mine. And you say, well, how is my life not honouring to God? How is it that I feel that I just don't bring anything to the assembly? How is it that I feel I just don't bring honour and glory to the God who saved me? Well, could it just be this, that your sin first needs dealing with and cleansing? Before God will ever choose to use you. And sin is want to be made, sin and its cleansing is want to be made before you could ever bring honour to God. And so that's the order of that scale of sacrifice. But then we notice that we go a little smaller. We go a little smaller, and we come then to, if he is not able, in verse 11, to bring two turtle doves or two young pigeons, then he that sins shall bring for his offering the tenth part of an ephah of fine flour for a sin offering. He shall put no oil upon it, neither shall he put any frankincense thereon, for it is a sin offering. Now when we come to this, you say, well, why no oil? Why no frankincense upon this altar? Well, frankincense was really what was brought out in, I think it was the peace offering. or is it the meal offering in chapter 2. There's oil there, and there's frankincense there. There's a sweetness there, which is brought out of the life of Christ. Now, this trespass offering is not a sweet smell and savour offering. This trespass offering is talking specifically, not now about the life of Christ, but about sin being dealt with. And so even though you wouldn't be precluded if you couldn't afford to bring those two turtle doves, you still had to come in the way in which God commanded. And you still had to offer in the way which God would ask. And there would be no oil, and there would be no frankincense, for it is a sin offering. It is the hard facts of sin being dealt with. There's no sweetness there. And I do just wonder if we're entering into ground here. I'm referring to scriptures such as that his soul was made an offering for sin, as is brought out in the book of the Hebrews for us. I wonder if now we're just entering into he was made sin, that we might be made the righteousness of God in him. And the fundamental truth of Calvary is that sin was dealt with there. And yes, there was a great honour and glory and sweetness about the life of Christ, and his life being given wholly, and the summation of that life at the cross of Calvary. And yet when we are talking about the sin being dealt with, the sky went dark. That one crucified between the two evenings, after the sixth to the ninth hour, and he cries out with a loud voice, "Eli, Eli, lama sabachthani, my God, why hast thou forsaken me?" Is there any sweetness there? It would beg the question. And the priest shall make an atonement for him as touching his sin. Now, I'm not saying that there wasn't sweetness at Calvary. Obviously, from the burnt offering and from the meal offering, we can see that there was something of satisfaction brought to the very heart of God to see his son conclude the plan of redemption at the cross. But here, when we're dealing specifically with sin, the scriptures are very careful to tell us that there was no sweetness in sin being dealt with, and sins. Trespasses, we're dealing with now the fruit. We're dealing with the effect of Adam's fall. And then verse 13, "And the priest shall make an atonement for him as touching his sin, that he hath sinned in one of these, and it shall be forgiven him." And so, no matter how big or how expensive the offering would have been, the outcome was the same. Because it is not about what we bring, it's about how God will deal with it. It's not about how big our faith is or how big our offering would be to God. It's about how he has dealt with it. And the conditions for dealing with a sin offering and a trespass is very clear and is laid out by God. And he's the one who deals with sin. It's him. Clearly we're not the ones who deal with it. For we're coming at it with all different issues, and we're coming to the offering here with different scales of what we are able to give. And so it is not on account of the scale of what we can give. For really, if we were to look at it, we can give nothing at all. But it is the way in which God deals with these offerings. He's going to deal with sin, not us. Now, as we move into verse 14, we're going to deal with the holy things, the things of sacrilege. Not now, just generally speaking. I suppose chapter 5, verse 1, all the way through to verse 13, it is the general things of trespass, of touching and talking. But now we're getting a little more specific. We're thinking about the trespass concerning the holy things. Now, consider this. Of a priest, and he's taken up, and perhaps he's got a little confused with all the offerings that are going on within the day. And some sacrifices he's meant to eat, and other sacrifices he's not meant to eat. And some things he's meant to pour the blood out, and some things he's meant to sprinkle the blood. And perhaps it would just be that he would sin through ignorance against the sanctuary. A sin against the sanctuary. Well, there's a sacrifice for that too. For it's a sin against the Lord himself and against his sanctuary. And restitution needs to be made. You'll notice here that out of with thy estimation by shekels of silver after the shekel of the sanctuary, that's the standard of silver, I would suggest, for a trespass offering. So not only is there restitution by sacrifice, but there is restitution of a monetary kind too, which is want to be made. And he shall make amends for the harm that he hath done in the holy thing. He's dealing with sacrifice. He's dealing with men's and women's sacrifice as they're being brought to God. And it needs to be taken care of with the utmost attention to detail. And not only is he going to have to sacrifice, but he's going to have to add the fifth part there too. And restore that which he took away. Remember the intensity of how God deals with sin against the sanctuary. Achan took Babylonish garments, Babylonish priestly garments, and hid them in his tent, and he was dealt with severely. Ananias and Sapphira, I would suggest to you, if the church is God's sanctuary on earth today, as indwelling the believers, may we make the application that at the outset of the church age, Ananias and Sapphira sinned against God in complete obstruction of the Spirit of God, and they were dealt with severely. And you say, is that this not just all a little bit too much? Surely the priest might have just got a little confused for all the offerings and the sacrifices which he was making in a day. And God says no. There is a standard to be upheld when it comes to the sanctuary. And every trespass made against the sanctuary. Notice, it isn't made against the people. It's made against the sanctuary. It's made against the place where God dwells. And it's of the utmost importance of how it is dealt with, and the utmost severity of how it is dealt with. And so there is a financial regard to this. There is a restitution which is added to this of the fifth part, 20% added thereunto, and there is a sacrifice, and it shall be forgiven him. Never out with the heart of God to forgive. Do all of these things and God will not forgive. No, not at all. Uphold the standard and God will forgive. Isn't it lovely? On the basis of the Lord Jesus Christ, who upheld the standard, God is still willing and able to forgive. Now let's just touch quickly on the trespass concerning the commandments. And if a soul sin and commit any of these things which are forbidden to be done by the commandments, though he know it not, though he wist it not. Now I'm assuming here that it is something of slight doubt. Yet he is guilty. Even when there is doubt involved, we're going back to the point that we are inherently sinful. And if a man was doubtful about his sin, it still ought to be dealt with. And he shall bring a ram without blemish, with thy estimation for a trespass offering unto the priest. And the point here is, concerning his ignorance wherein he erred and knew it not, it shall be forgiven him. The idea there is if there is doubt in play. These other things, it may well have just been clear. In chapter 5, verses 1 to 13, it might have just been clear as day that though someone thought they were ignorant, well, someone's come along and they've told them what you did was wrong and sacrifice needs to be made. But here, we're thinking more in a dubious case. And yet, trespass offering is wont to be made. He hath certainly trespassed against the Lord. If in any shadow of doubt, if the conscience can't make it clear, if fellow man can't make it clear, even if you err, the scriptures say, even if there is doubt in your mind, better to be on the right side of right. Because the scriptures say, it is ultimately true that he has certainly trespassed against the Lord. And so in the stark circumstances, in the dubious circumstances, sacrifice is wont to be made. And the Lord spake unto Moses, and as we go through chapter to 6, we're thinking now about trespass done wittingly against a neighbour. This isn't so much out of a dubious sense and an unwitting, unknowing sense, but it is clearly done. He's violently deceived his neighbour or taken something away. Or he's found that which was lost and he lies about it. His neighbour says, I've lost a sheep, and the neighbour goes and finds it and he lies that he ever found it and he holds it for himself. And he doesn't need he doesn't need the conscience to tell him, and he doesn't need fellow man to tell him. He knows completely and utterly himself that he has sinned against God. And he swears falsely, verse 3. And then he shall restore that which he took violently away. I just want to pause for a second. Because you and I may well come to the scriptures, and yes, there is an immediate application to the children of Israel here, but by the grace of God, what Adam violently took away out of the hand of God, what we have taken away and sinned against God in sometimes the most violent of cases, and yet the demand was never on us to deal with that sin. It was with Christ. And Psalm 69 tells us of how that he restored that which he took not away. The blame was not on Christ. And yet he dealt with sin. But here, restoration and sacrifice want to be made in the trespass offering. And I'd suggest to you that in the person of the Lord Jesus Christ, not only do we see that the payment for sin is made, but there is restoration which is granted to the sinner. Restoration to take away the guilt of sin and the payment of sin. And there is an estimation to be given to it, I just want to finish on this point because it says, with thy estimation for a trespass offering unto the priest. There's something here too of the estimation. You have it in chapter 5 and verse 18. Out of the flock with thy estimation for a trespass offering. You have it there in chapter 5 and verse 15 too. Thy estimation by shekels of silver. And I just want to apply this again to the cross. As we see Christ in all the sacrifices here, who makes the estimation of what sin costs God? It's God himself. Only God knows the estimation of the price of sin. And it's not for us to decide what our sin has cost God. It's already been decided in full when he sent his son, the Lord Jesus Christ, to the cross of Calvary. The price of our sin was beyond our comprehension. Nevertheless, our estimation. So as we have the trespass offering, we have the idea of conscience in view, conveying guilt, the actions of touching, talking, things done against a neighbour, things done against the sanctuary, things done against the commandment, which is very clear. And all are given their standard for which they ought to be forgiven, and the way in which they ought to be forgiven. And yes, you can come as you are, as God has profited you, but you can't do what you want, and you must offer in the way in which he has commanded. And whether it be fine flour all the way through to the lamb, God has given a scale which would not prohibit any man to see their sin forgiven. And it is true that at the end of all of these things, atonement is made. And as we, on our view of these things, start with trespass and move to sin, having our trespasses dealt with, and sin at the root dealt with to cause justification. Not just ransom and redemption, but justification and having peace with God in the peace offering. We have sanctification. And then we're brought close and close and closer to God. Consecrated unto his dear name, unto his work in the burnt offering. That our will would be linked to every motion of his will. Every motivation of his pure heart, every fibre of his being would be linked with him. And may we be reminded that the trespass offering perhaps was just that first step on a child of being of God, of the nation of Israel being restored into full communion of what it was to dwell with God and to understand relationship with him. I trust these things have been of help to us, and of enjoyment as they have been to me, of drawing near to God and understanding the cost of what it is to dwell with him when sin precludes us from that dwelling. And so it all needs to be dealt with, and how it has been shown perfectly in the person of the Lord Jesus Christ that sin and the trespass of it all would be dealt with in its entirety.